Welcome back to the Gospel. It is the Gospel Sports Truths Podcast, your favorite day of the week. We break down all things that are sports. A whole bunch of stuff to talk about today. This is going to be a wonderful sports weekend. I'm your host, Zay, the Fantasy Football Fiend, and I have my guy, BK Wins. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, everyone.
Good word of the week. We got quite a bit going on. Before we hop right into it, though, I do want to give you a gentle reminder that if you haven't checked us out on YouTube yet, make sure you do that. Click and subscribe. If you haven't followed us or subscribed on whichever podcast app that you may use, make sure you do that as well. And as well as being on the Facebook group, the Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. You'll see that same little logo there when you look us up on Facebook that you do when you are using your app to listen to the podcast. I wish every way you choose to view, make sure you hop on and hop on soon. With that being the case, BK, what's the good word of the week?
Yeah, so the NFL playoffs are set. Curious, what two games most have your attention? I'd love your breakdown and then go ahead and make some picks here.
Well, the two games that I think are going to be the most interesting to me, I'll put it that way. I can't necessarily say the most exciting per se, but Pittsburgh versus Baltimore and Denver versus Buffalo. Normally, you kind of have the opposite reaction when it's two teams that see each other all the time. It's like been there, done that, seen this, except Pittsburgh tends to have the upper hand on Baltimore, and it is a divisional game, and it does give a little bit of intrigue to me because this particular game, I think Baltimore will have the upper hand on. They played better, but coaching is everything in the NFL, and who knows if Mike Tomlin just, for whatever reason, just kind of has Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens number. So I'm looking forward to seeing what those changes and rearrangements are going to look like. Pittsburgh is kind of falling into the playoffs. I'm glad they did as well as they did on the front end of the season in comparison to the back end of the season. Baltimore has just been, you know, riding on through all year long on the coattails of what could be a three-time MVP. So we'll kind of have to see how that works out, but I'm definitely looking forward to that matchup. And to give you a pick, I'm actually going to roll with Baltimore. I think Baltimore is finally going to exercise the demons and get past Pitt without much of an issue this go-around, actually. I don't think it's going to be quite as close of a game as we're used to between these two teams. So that's kind of where my mindset is there. Denver versus Buffalo. It's the reason that this matchup is so interesting to me is because what Buffalo does well is put up points. What Denver does well is keep you from putting up points, but they can also score. So if any team's makeup, if you will, is going to be geared towards taking out Buffalo, I kind of feel like Denver has the various attributes needed for Josh Allen not to have the sort of day that he can put a team on his back and win by himself. And I don't know for sure that Cook is going to be able to do much running on this defensive line. With that being said, there's normally a shakeup or two in the first round, in the wild card round. And based on the matchups, Denver versus Buffalo is the matchup that I see having the highest potential, I'll say, of being that David beating Goliath, if you will. So that's kind of where I am on those two matchups in the breakdown. What teams do you have, and what are we looking at from your end?
Well, before I answer that, I just a follow up on the Steelers. I don't know if you realize, but they're on an 8-year postseason drought. Haven't won a playoff game in 8 years. It's hard to believe it's been that long. I know, obviously, you picked the Ravens to win, but what would it take for the Steelers to end that slide this year in Baltimore?
If you stop Lamar, you stop Baltimore. Can you stop LeVar? It helps them out a great deal that Zay Flowers won't be playing. They don't really have anybody else at wide receiver. Going to be a huge game for Andrews. And I can see, especially with it being the playoffs, you're going to get a healthy dose of Lamar running because there is no tomorrow. You're going to get a healthy dose of Derrick Henry running the ball. And that is what could keep Pittsburgh in it, because that's their style of play. The knockdown, drag out, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. If you play that brand of football, it gives Pittsburgh a little bit of a better chance. But their defense hasn't even been as good as it can be. So can they stop just the run with Henry and Lamar? I don't know that they can. But if they can do that, and there aren't but so many weapons to throw the ball to, that would give them the best chance of winning the game. Although I don't really see a pathway to that.
How surprised were you that the Steelers made a quarterback change come the playoffs?
They're saying right now that Justin Fields may be the guy. I don't know if that's definitive. Did you see something that was definitive on that? I know they said that they could use him, or even I may have seen something that said they should use him. But I don't. Mike Tomlin is good for gamesmanship as well. So I don't know if it's actually going to happen, or if they just want to kind of make them prepare for another wrinkle in there.
No, that's definitely fair. I mean, so from what I read, the plan was to use Fields. So, you know, and I just think the timing of it's really odd, because it seems like a panic move, and that's not something the Steelers ever do. Like, they're always the model of consistency with their organization from top down. They don't change coaches often. They do what they do. I would be surprised to see, let's put it this way, it would be a mistake to see Fields at all. I understand that, look, we know that I'm not a Russell Wilson fan and how mediocre that offense has looked. But at the end of the day, you don't want to be messing around with a quarterback change when your quarterback's healthy come the playoffs. That just screams like a desperate panic move, and we know how that usually turns out.
But shouldn't they be desperate and panicking? I mean, like, I don't know how many more games you have to lose to be desperate. And I feel as if they've made the, not changes, but rearrangements that they can make with Russell Wilson. So, I mean, Russell can't really win that much anymore. Maybe you need just that different wrinkle that feels can kind of like, okay, you don't, this pass option type of a setup where you truly don't know what I'm going to do. But with Russell Wilson, you know exactly what I'm going to do. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's as much of a panic move as much as it is a necessary move based on the amount of losses that they've accumulated at the end of the season here.
I mean, look, make no mistake. And I hear what you're saying. I really do. I do. But I guess I look at it like this. We both know I'm not on the Christmas card list for Russell Wilson. But at the end of the day, he's still a better option than Fields. I've seen the Fields story. He's a game manager. Yeah, he does sprinkle the ability to extend plays and run around and do some read option with all that. But I would rather have a guy like Russell Wilson with his playoff experience, who's been playing the last 2 months. I trust him more than I trust a guy who's been sitting on the bench for 2 months. Like, now, if you were to bring him in for a series or two, just for a different look, you know, then I'm okay with that if it's a change of pace. But if you're just pulling him, then that to me is a mistake.
And that's what I think will happen, because if you notice, they didn't say that they were benching Wilson. They said that they want to use Fields. So I'm kind of reading the tea leaves here. And I kind of feel like it's going to be one of those, hey, we start out with Russ. If he's rusty, if we go ahead and bring in Fields for a few plays and see if we can't get something rolling with him. I honestly feel like basically what they're saying is we're going to pull out all the stops, and anything that we can do, we're going to try to do, because we don't feel like we're in a great position to beat this team. I kind of feel like that's what it is.
Yeah, for sure. As far as the two games for me, well, The one on the radar is Philly and Green Bay. I think this matchup would have been even better, but I just don't know how healthy Jordan Love really is. He, you know, he's been complaining about, complain isn't the right word. He's made note of the fact that his elbow's been bothering him. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure playing in the cold in Philly against that defense with the bum elbow is a great plan. So whereas I would have thought, much like what the Packers did to the Cowboys last year when they blew them out in Dallas, while I would not predict a Packer blowout at Philly because Philly's a much better team than Dallas was last year or this year, I do think that Green Bay could have given them all they could handle. But with a compromised Love, I think the Eagles are able to get through that game. The other game that I have on my radar, which won't surprise you, is my Commanders taking on Baker and the Bucs. I'm excited about this because earlier in the year when they played in week one, the Bucs waxed them, but that was Daniel's first start and it just didn't go great. That seemed like two seasons ago at this point. Washington's offense has been really, really good for the most part. The Bucs are great on offense. I just trust Washington to be able to score more points. I like them to win a close game, but I think it's going to be, they're going to light up the scoreboard, these two teams. I expect a high scoring affair and it should be a great one to watch. So can't wait to see it unfold.
Completely agree. This one, I believe Washington will be close, but no cigar. It's something to be said for experience, and Tampa Bay has a whole lot of it. I don't know that anyone on this Washington team has been to the playoffs, unless they were with another team, which obviously that could be the case, but not very much experience from the coach on down as far as navigating the playoffs. Heck of a season. I would have loved for them to win just so we're on the same page. But when we get down to the nuts and bolts of it, playoff victories tend to go to teams that win playoff games. I'm hoping that they'll be a mainstay going forward because I love what I see from Jaden Daniels. But Baker Mayfield has been otherworldly this year. They were winning games with injuries and all that kind of good stuff going on that most people didn't give them a shot to win. And I want to say one of the only key players that are currently out would probably be Godwin. And they've kind of figured out how to navigate that with other younger wide receivers and everything. That's kind of where I'm thinking that game's going to go.
The matchup that I'm intrigued about that is, you know, Washington traded for Lattimore, which was a sneaky great move. And Lattimore is healthy. And, you know, they have a history, him and Evans. And, you know, Lattimore is going to be locked up, or I would expect him to be locked up on Evans. Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing is with no Godwin, and if Evans gets basically the shadow treatment, can the Buccaneers find offense from somebody else that's not Evans?
So yeah, his name is Bucky Irvin. Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see. I'm curious how that goes. Well, next on the good word, so the top four NFL seeds, the Chiefs, Bills, Lions, and Eagles were combined 31-3 at home this year, which is crazy. My question to you, which one of these four top seeds will be out first?
Buffalo. Kansas City's going to win in the first round. Detroit's going to win in the first round. All things being equal, unless Love is healthy and Hurts is not, I believe Philly's the better team there. The team with the highest level of difficulty in the first round is going to be Buffalo. So that's why I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I would have actually said Philadelphia if Love was healthy. But since he's not, I do think it's Buffalo. Just because they have a lot of question marks. You know, like, I don't trust their coach. McDermott loves to choke in the postseason. And, you know, and the other thing is the Bills defense doesn't wow me. So, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on Josh Allen. He's been able to handle it without question. I mean, him and Lamar are 1 and 2 as far as MVP candidates, but it'll be interesting to see, because nobody puts more pressure on a quarterback and has more sacks than the Broncos. I'm really curious to see how the Bills will hold up in this game, keeping Josh Allen upright. So it should be a heck of a game.
All you got to do to beat Buffalo is not let Josh Allen turn into Superman. If you can keep Allen with his suit on, being Clark Kent versus donning the cape and being Superman, you're going to win this game. That's just where my mind is right now. And Bo Nix is possibly a better version of Josh Allen. Just looking at the size, looking at what they're capable of doing on the field, looking at the running capability, like, he is Josh Allen-esque. I'll put it that way.
It's definitely Bo time. So rounding out our good word of the week, college football playoffs. As we're recording this now, obviously one half of the semifinals, Notre Dame and Penn State are locking up.
Ohio. And the game is tied, so that'll have no bearing on any of the answers that are about to be given.
We obviously know the semis are Notre Dame, Penn State, and Ohio State in Texas. UI and Vander broke down earlier this week who we thought would win and all that. So I'm not going to ask that again. What I will ask you, though, is out of these four coaches, which of these coaches has the most to prove or lose? If you were to rank these four, who has the most to prove and who has the least?
So I think that's two very different questions. Because in order to lose something, you have had to have won something already. So it kind of disqualifies three of the four coaches as far as most to lose. Other than obviously, well, I can't even say that, because other than Ryan Day, none of those other coaches are even on the hot seat. So what do they really have to lose other than that game? Or maybe some recruits, you know? As far as the most to prove, that swings the opposite way. James Franklin, I believe, has quite a bit to prove, because he's been kind of known to kind of melt under the brightest lights. Steve Sarkisian hasn't really done anything in Texas other than not have a losing season over the last, you know, couple of years, whatever the case is. So a lot to prove as far as whether or not Texas is as good as they look when they beat up on the, you know, school of the blind. Next would be Ryan Day, because with Ryan Day, it's not as bad as James Franklin, only because he beats James Franklin. So it's like you have one coach in Ryan Day that we're looking at sideways because of what he hasn't been able to do against the likes of Michigan and some of the other top tier schools. So he kind of has a bit to prove there. I honestly believe that even if Ryan Day wins the championship, the next conversation will be, well, oh, you only won that because the quote unquote best teams didn't get into the playoffs. So your team was just organically better than the other teams that were there. So you did what you were supposed to. So I don't think for that reason that Ryan Day can prove a whole lot other than being a champion has been a champion. But I do think that he can lose a little bit more luster, a little bit more cachet. Marcus Freeman, help me out. Who's thought that Notre Dame would even get this far? Like, he's playing with house money as far as I'm concerned. Like, even during the year itself, like, no one's really been, you know, pounding at the table saying, look at Notre Dame, you guys are sleeping on Notre Dame. Like, no one. Sometimes it hurts you not to be in a conference. Like, no one's looking at you but you and yours. So that's kind of where I am with it.
Yeah, so I can definitely see that. For me, I think the coach that has the most to prove is James Franklin. He's 1-18 against top five teams. You know, every year they seem to win 9 or 10 games, usually 10, but they can't beat Ohio State or Michigan. So, you know, then they lose those two games, and that's pretty much it. So here they are in the semifinals. They've had the easiest path to the semifinals, getting SMU and Boise State. But I say that to say that they've been really impressive because they have blown out both those teams in the postseason and looked great doing it. And obviously they were up 10-3 at halftime against Notre Dame, now level at 10. So a toss up here in the second half. But, you know, Franklin 1-18 against top five teams, lost 8 in a row against the Buckeyes and Ryan Day. You have to prove with all those recruiting classes and all the, you can't keep winning double digits every year and not win any meaningful games that count or matter to the fan base or to your university without it being a problem. So he's number one. Number two would be Ryan Day, you know, because most coaches who are 66-10 don't have to answer very many questions. But unfortunately, so is the burden at Ohio State. And he knows the deal. You have a loaded roster. You spend $20 million on NIL. The only game that matters to the folks up north is beating the team up north. You can't seem to get that done. So, you know, 1-4. The recruiting's there. The NIL's there. The wins and losses in the game aren't there. So, you know, but they've been great, much like Penn State. Two dominant playoff performances, including by far the most impressive performance of the postseason, which was a beatdown of the Ducks. And you and I both thought that the Buckeyes would beat Oregon, but nobody predicted it to be over at halftime. So not even the biggest Buckeyes fan in the world would have ever forecast it to be done at halftime like that. So really impressive. But and I think the coaches that don't really have anything to worry about are Sark at Texas. It's only a second year, two playoff berths, you know, not a whole lot there. In Notre Dame, he's playing with house money. To your point, most people didn't think he'd be there. It's been a terrific year. He's in the semifinals. He's done a nice job building that program. I don't have any issue there. So those two have the easiest road. It's really Day and Franklin. And it'd be ironic if they both played for the title because the winners love in life and the losers got more questions. So,
But I will say this. If Penn State and Ohio State get to the championship game, if you ask me that, if you ask me next week or week after next, whenever the game is, which coach has the most to lose, it's definitely going to be Ryan Day. Because you wait until you get to the biggest of stages to lose to someone that you never lose to, you may still have to go. You know what I mean? You may, like, because you would just still be proving that when the lights are the brightest, they tend to blind you instead of give you that extra gear to go into, if that makes sense.
No, for sure. Well,
all right, BK, the truth and nothing but the truth. What we got?
So which coach and quarterback have the most to prove in this year's NFL playoffs?
OBK, this is easy. That's Allen and McDermott, and that's just the truth and nothing but the truth. It's interesting how some teams tend to do what they've always done. Completely different staff, completely different players. The Buffalo Bills still look like the team that, matter of fact, they don't look as good as the team that got to 3 Super Bowls and never won one. This team has a lot to prove. Due to money constraints, this team isn't going to get much better unless they do it via the draft. And I don't know that McDermott is going to have a job much longer unless he gets minimally to the Super Bowl. Like at some point, you got to, you know, say, hey, Moses, thanks a lot for getting us to the promised land, but I don't think you're going to get us through. So that's, you know, McDermott and Allen for me as far as who has the most to prove this year in the playoffs.
I definitely understand that. Just to change it up a little bit, I'm going to bat 1-for-2 on this. For the coach, for sure is McDermott. for the reasons that you outlined. It's
BK, I thought you were asking about the pair. That's why I went with Allen and I thought you were asking about like the tied together. But anyway, go ahead.
No, so you can split it up.
So, I think I was still going with Allen and McDermott, though, so go ahead.
But I'm going to stay in the same conference, but I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson. You know, he is perennially disappointed in the postseason. A lot of shaky performances and bad losses, especially as a big home favorite, 9.5, 10 points at home over the Steelers. This is a game you got to have. Can he get it done in the postseason? I think the pressure is on him and McDermott for the coach. There's no coach under more postseason pressure than him. So, yeah, that would be my answer. Although the pair of Allen and McDermott makes total sense. That would have been my second choice. So I'm all for that. I think everyone else really isn't in any kind of pressure outside of those two teams, really.
Those other teams are playing with house money. Other than there's a little bit of pressure in Philly. I can say, depending on what happens this offseason, McDermott and Jesus, I forget his name. But what's Sirianni? They may be two peas in the same pot. Hurts ain't going nowhere no time soon. I don't know that people are really giving the Eagles the same chance to win as Buffalo and the Ravens, which that tends to help you out when one of my favorite sayings is expectation is the genesis of disappointment. So when your expectations aren't that high, you can't really be disappointed. It's just kind of like, oh, shucks, we got there. Philly is one of those places that the fans don't play that game. They'll boo you in the middle of the game down by 3 points.
Listen, they booed Santa Claus.
That's all you need to know. They literally booed Santa Claus. YouTube it if you don't believe us. What we got up next week, eh?
So going back to college football, could you see a path? Because I've been reading a lot about this in different sites. Could Ohio State head coach Ryan Day leave on his own after this year?
Absolutely not. Never going to happen. This is Ryan Day's agent's way of saying, I have options if you want to break up with me. That's all this. You don't leave Ohio State for any job. Like any job. What coaches last left Ohio State because they were greener pasture somewhere else? You find them for me because I don't remember who that guy is. So
I agree with you, but you know, I'll play a little devil's advocate here. Give the people something here to mull over here. The one thing that I could see is it can't be much fun for him to coach this team, knowing that no matter what he does, he is scrutinized to the nth degree. So while he wouldn't leave the job for another college job, who's to say after this year, especially if it ends with a title, he doesn't bolt to the NFL where there's all these openings? Now,
I don't see it, BK, only because of the competition. You mean to tell me I'm going to hire Ryan Day over Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, Mike Vrabel? It's only 6 jobs open as of today, depending on what these. As long as nobody craps the bed in the first round of the playoffs, that can open up another couple of jobs. But this just isn't the year for it. Like, there are coaches who should not have a job right now that want a job or that are first up for a job. Let me ask it this way to you, BK. Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, Mike Vrabel, Brian Flores, Pete Carroll. Who else is out there right now? Spagnuolo, defensive specialist, Kansas City's defensive specialist there. Is also interviewing for jobs. I'm trying to think of any of the hot names out there that I'm missing.
Kingsbury at Washington.
Kingsbury. I've heard that he may choose not. He may pull a Ben Johnson and choose not to leave this year. But that's 7 guys that I would all pick over Ryan Day. unless like a Dallas Cowboys type of a situation, like McCarthy fired last minute, didn't think it was going to happen, but it did. Like, it would have to be a team that truly wanted him, like him specifically. And they ended up firing their coach a little bit later on than most coaches that got let go. Like, who do you think he's better than? And I know we aren't GMs, but you've seen plenty of football. You've seen him coach plenty of football. Who do you think that you would choose him over and not be upset about your decision?
I definitely would feel better about Ryan Day than Aaron Glenn. I know Vander also was not very high on Aaron Glenn either. You know, he doesn't have any head coaching experience. He hasn't proven that he can run a team. Now, granted, he hasn't had a chance to prove that he can run a team. So there's that, you know, that catch 22. But if Ryan Day delivers a national title, which I'm going to preface this by saying the only way he would leave is if he won the title. If he doesn't win the title, he's coming back and taking his $9 or $10 million and calling the day. But if they win, he has nothing else to prove. And if I'm him, and I'm just speaking out of his lens here for a second, if I'm him, it's never going to get better than a national title there. People are going to crucify me next year when I probably lose at Michigan for the fifth straight year on the road. So do I really want to go through another year to lose again? So I'm going to take my title. I'm going to take all the as you would say, all the roses that come with it. And I'm going to bolt for the NFL and prove myself on the highest level. I'm not saying he's a better candidate than, because most of those guys are better candidates than he is in the NFL. I don't disagree with you. However, I do see a path where he just says, you know what? I'm tired of people thinking that I suck at my job and that nothing I do is ever good enough. I'm going to go somewhere else. And I actually can see him doing that. Much like the same thing, I think, where, look, Harbaugh has been itching to coach in the NFL forever. And having won a title and three straight Big Ten titles and a national title, it was a done deal that he was going to go to the NFL. Because, again, you're not going to leave on anything than that. So it made perfect sense. But I think a national title would give him a reason to say, you know what? And look, I don't like Ryan Day. I would have fired him a little bit later than you did. You were ahead of the curve on this, to your credit. I would have fired him after last year. You were ahead of the curve on that. For sure, I would have fired him. But at the end of the day, if he wins a title this year, I tell the people, F you, I'll take my title and run.
But see, I think it's the exact opposite, BK. I think if you don't win the title this year, that's when the noise gets the loudest. Like, if you win a title this year, nobody at Ohio State, no fan, nobody can say anything to you for minimally the next 2 to 3 years. You go to the NFL and stink up the joint. Now you're trying to find a college job 2 years from now. Like, his worst case scenario, if he wins a championship, is being a champion and then going back to winning 10, 12 games in college and still being in the playoffs as a champion. So if I'm Ryan Day, I stay put if I win the championship, because now the heat should be off of me for 2 to 3 years. If I go to the NFL and I have a Gerard Mayo type situation, because to be clear, none of these teams that are hiring coaches right now are very good. So the likelihood of you going to the NFL and doing well is slim to none as far as immediately is concerned. So I don't know. I mean, I hear where you're coming from. I just actually think it's the opposite and equal side of things that will kind of give you a little bit more latitude in college and with the NFL teams that are going to be choosing head coaches. I would personally wait for a team that feels like they should be better than where they have been, but they're already good. Like, for instance, if McDermott stinks up the joint and he gets fired, I'd go after that team. But I wouldn't want to go to a team that has been perennially horrible And now I got to try to make you better than you've been in the last umpteen years. Like, I don't know that that's the best spot for him based on what he's been able to do at Ohio State. Because when you generally have the most talent available, depending on who you're going up against, so are at least equal talent, and you can't seem to figure it out. If you lose to Michigan every year, what happens when a certain coach or a certain team just has your number and that's your division mate, and now you're losing to them twice a year instead of just once a year? Hell, what happens if two coaches in the division just have your number? We've already seen Ryan Day not be able to succeed if you have the blueprint to beat him, if that makes sense.
So I'm going to be petty. I'm going to be petty real quick, Zay. Could you imagine Ryan Day taking the Raiders job? Then Harbaugh can beat him twice a year.
And that's exactly what would happen. Like, okay, if Ryan Day goes to the Raiders, every single team in that division will kick the crap out of the Raiders. I'm sorry. That's just what's going to happen. There is no opening where you aren't going to get the crap. Go to Jacksonville, you're going to get the crap kicked out of you. Go to Vegas, same thing. Go to maybe if you go to a team like, I can't even think of a team with the opening that it would make sense. I really can't.
No, the only way that it would make sense where it would go to a team with it would be in really good shape would be if the Bills or the Eagles job opened, because then you know you have a very talented roster. Yeah. So outside of those two coaches getting canned because they did bad in the playoffs or whatever, that would be the only way.
I wouldn't want them in New Orleans. I mean, I just stay where you're at if you win the championship. That's the most success you're going to have.
So last but not least, wrapping up the truth, this will make you smile, Zay, because we're going to talk a little bit of the association here. Will either the Cavs or the Thunder, and by the way, that was a barn burner last night, the Cavs won, will either one of these teams win 70 games this year? Before you answer, there's only two teams in the history of the league that have won 70. The Warriors won 73, but could not get the ring. Yeah. The Bulls won 72. Did finish the job and win the title. Will either of these two win 70?
Nope. Either injuries or just regressing to the mean is going to eventually catch up with them. Look, egg on my face. Maybe changing the coach with the Cavs made a difference.
Oh.
You're saying.
Oh.
I don't mind admitting when I'm wrong. And I'm happy for the Cavs to be in this position, but their best players don't really stay healthy. Spider, he's going to get injured at some point. Their center, Allen, he's going to get injured at some point. Mobley, he's going to get injured at some point. Like, I just don't trust that the injury bug won't catch up. Hopefully it'll be sometime mid-season versus being close to the playoff time, because both of these teams could – OKC more likely than the Cavs, but both of these teams could win their prospective conferences. But yeah, I don't think either one will reach that 70 mark.
No, I agree with you. It's funny with the Cavs. At 32-4 after last night's win, they would have to go 38-8 to win 70. The Thunder had won 15 in a row before losing last night in the land. They're 30-6. But think about that. They'd have to go 40-6 to get there. Like that.
I'm fit.
And in the day with injury and the schedule and travel and load management and all the things, I just don't see a team pushing for that like it would in the past. I could be wrong, but I don't think either one of them gets it done.
Agreed. So things are a little different this week, BK, with our top five all-time favorite of something.
I look forward to you copying me this week, too.
We may have one or two overlapping there. Actually, No, we don't. So this will be interesting for sure. But top five all-time favorite police shows. So law enforcement shows are all the rage. They have been forever and a day. And when I say police shows, I do use that term lightly. More law enforcement oriented shows. I'll put it that way. But yeah. Number five, what you got?
I got Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Okay, so you went the comedy direction. I see what you putting down there. One of the funniest shows.
I love you give me law enforcement and you make me laugh. I'm all for it.
Agreed.
Who you got?
Yeah. For me, number five, mine is an oldie but goodie. You can't go wrong with Andy Griffith. You give me comedy. You give me police. It's the best of both worlds. I Andy Griffith, I grew up watching, and I still watch it right now today. So, yeah, Andy Griffith is my number five. Number four, what you got?
I have an oldie but goodie. So, great minds, Dragnet. I can't imagine having a top five without Dragnet. So, that would be my number four.
I can imagine it because Dragnet isn't in my top five. However, there are an honorable mention. I throw that out there.
I would expect nothing less.
Number four. This is going to kind of maybe throw people off a little bit, but think about it. It kind of is a cop show. Dexter. Dexter is one of the best shows ever in general. It's more of a thriller / suspense, but it is definitely written around Met a Cop. So yeah, Dexter, number four for me. What you got for number three?
I love that show. That's a great call. So some people may criticize me here for not making this one higher, but I actually have Law and Order 3.
I'm going to challenge this. Which one? Because I may agree with you depending on which one you say, and you can't say all of them.
No,
that's not a show.
Say the mainstream one, not like SVU or any of the other, specifically the main brand.
The old school Law and Order, basically.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm not mad at that. I mean, Law and Order is like one of those shows that you make your comeuppance as an actor. Like, if your agent is worth their salt at all and you can't get on Law and Order, then pick a new agent because something is wrong. Something is way wrong. All righty. Number three for me. Again, this one's kind of out of the norm, if you will. Another oldie but giddy. Murder, She Wrote. I know she isn't a cop, but she works with them on every single show. And for a while, I thought the last season or episode of this show was going to be them showing that she was somehow tied up in all these murders because everywhere she goes, somebody dies. If I saw Angela Lansbury walking my way, I don't want to autograph. I don't want to shake hands. I'm going the opposite way. Because people tend to die around her no matter what the situation is. But that's another one of those shows that you can't go. I literally go to sleep every night either watching Murder, She Wrote or Matlock. Because the thing about old school TV, it don't have the dynamic sound. It isn't going to wake me up in the middle of the night because someone's screaming or music comes on or something. It kind of keeps that same general tone. And I can't do silence when I sleep. Silence is way too loud. I'll hear a cricket passing gas in the hallway. Like, I can't do silence. It's too loud. So Murder, She Wrote is my number three.
I love it. I love it.
Number two, what you got?
Chicago PD.
I haven't watched that one, BK. That's the only show you've named so far that I haven't watched.
Oh, well, that'll be your binge show.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm always looking for a show to binge. I literally, as I was preparing for this show, found like two other cop shows. And I was like, you know what? I can actually watch that from the beginning and not even remember what I know about the show. So let's go ahead and put that on the list. But Chicago PD, matter of fact, I've seen more episodes of Chicago Fire than I have Chicago PD. But I'm sure it's just as good as Chicago Fire, if not better. So yeah, I'm definitely going to put that on my list. There's sure enough crime in Chicago for that to be a good show. So we're going to go and put that on the binge watch list. Number two for me, Criminal Minds. Mm. I put Criminal Minds in the same category as I do Law and Order because there's several different versions of the show, if you will. But it's just one of those shows that have you ever heard anyone say, well, that episode of Criminal Minds sucked? Like no one, like it's certain shows that they just stay in the pocket. They do what they do, and they do what they do well. So you don't ever have to worry about them failing, if that makes sense. So.
No, I agree.
Number one, what you got?
So this is the truth and nothing but the truth. And we're speaking with the congregation. So my number one is some people are going to really shake their heads, but I'm going to have a little story time here. So number one for me is Castle. And I love it because what initially hooked me to that show is I had the biggest crush on Detective Kate Beckett.
Of course. How did I know?
So, you know, I mean, so that got me in the door. And then I'm like, oh, this show's really good. I enjoy it. And was really disappointed they pulled the plug after, I believe it was 8 seasons. It could have gone, but I know there was some friction there with Nathan Fillion and Stanna Katic, the leading actors in that show. But love me some Kate Beckett. So Castle, love the show, number one. Who you got?
All right, so before I give my number one, I do have two more honorable mentions. Rizzoli and House, Major Crimes.
Love them both.
Yeah, that it's hard to make a bad cop show, to be honest with you. My number one cop show, and this is number one because of all the things that they did that they shouldn't have done. And I was like, yep, I knew they did that stuff. That's The Shield. Like, The Shield was one of the first cop shows where everything that the cops did wasn't on the up and up. Like they a lot of the stuff that they did was, but some of the stuff, it was just like, ooh, you just did what? Wow, that just happened. Like, if you never, have you seen The Shield?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's, if you haven't seen The Shield, definitely worth binging. And it's almost been long enough now that I can start watching The Shield again from episode one. And all that I remember is that, what's his name? Michael Chick, is it Chickless? I think it's Michael Chick. He has a weird last name. But at any rate, he's one of my favorite actors from the show. That's what I remember about that. But yeah, that's my number one, The Shield. And that wraps up our top five all-time favorites. And now it's time to make some money. BK, best bets. What we doing this week, my guy?
So I'm going to start with college because I'm going to repeat what I gave last week here because it's still relevant. Notre Dame -1.5 against Penn State. I know we talked about it, that it was tied 10-10 at the last time that you and I talked. But I think Notre Dame will win this game. All I have to do is win. That's been the best.
Penn State just scored a touchdown, by the way. So it's like 24-17 now.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly 100% sure how much time is left in the game, but I do know that they just scored.
All right. Well, we need Notre Dame to make a comeback. The other one, Ohio State money line over Texas. Ohio State's the best team remaining in the playoffs. They've been playing like a team possessed after the embarrassing home loss to Michigan. Give me the Buckeyes over Texas in that matchup as well. NFL two plays, a straight up play. Give me the Fighting Harbaughs, in this case, Jim Harbaugh, -2 the Chargers at the Texans. What do we know about the Texans? They play at 4:30 Eastern time in the first round of the playoffs. They host a playoff game, and they lose. That's what they do every year. It's a tradition like any other. So,
They won their first playoff game last year.
That's because Joe Flacco is still throwing it to them. 1 for 5 doesn't count.
Touche.
So, and only you would remember that. Everyone else remembers all they're losing. Chargers -2 on the road to get it done against Houston. And next, we're going to do a little tease. Give me the Eagles, especially with the banged up Jordan Love. Hurts has been looking great in practice. My sources tell me I like the Eagles plus two with the tease. And I like the Bills minus 1.5. All they got to do is beat the Broncos. The Broncos, I think, will give them a game. But I like the Bills. They're just going to be too much at home in a home field advantage. Give me the Bills and Eagles with a teaser. And those are this week's best bets.
Love it. Love it. I think you choose. Who do you want to go first this week with our can't-miss weekly rant?
I'll give you the honors, Zay.
Okay. Well, this is something that just kind of grinds my gears just a little bit. Sometimes when things happen, we reach for the low-hanging fruit. As a country, we do this an awful lot. I'm going to just be honest with you. Jerod Mayo did not get fired because he's Black. Please stop saying that. Jerod Mayo got fired because he did a horrible job at being a coach. And there's several coaches that no one could have imagined would be available to hire that are available to hire. I don't have to wonder if they're going to eventually be good at their job. I don't have to wonder if they're going to take what was a top five defense and being a defensive guru now be a bottom five defense. I don't have to worry about that happening. I've seen Mike Vrabel take a team with similar talent as New England to the playoffs. I've seen Brian Flores take a struggling Miami team and actually get fired because he won too much. I've seen Ben Johnson take an offense that was lackluster to be nice and now is one of the top offenses in the entirety of the NFL. Okay. So, please just stop it with the low-hanging fruit. Everything isn't about what the most obvious thing in front of you may be. It's not all part in the pun, black and white. That's my rant.
No, very true. Well said. So for those of you living under a rock and missed last week's game, my Broncos benefited from Kansas City resting everybody that matters. Thank you, Andy Reid and the Chiefs, for not bothering to show up in Denver. However, it seems like many NFL fans, friends of mine on social media, and also fans and players of the Bengals have given their two cents about why it's ridiculous. Even some suggesting there should be an investigation why the Chiefs tanked their last game and rested all their key starters against Denver, which essentially let the Broncos, their rival, in the playoffs and caused the Bengals to miss it. Here's what I have to say about that. That's ridiculous. At the end of the day, here's the thing. And this is not about me wanting the Broncos in. It has nothing to do with that. This is not me being a fan when I say this. The Chiefs had the best record in the AFC. They've been banged up. Mahomes has been banged up and playing hurt for a month. They had nothing to play for. And I don't want to hear, well, it's a game on their schedule. And I read all these comments about, well, players are played to play and they should be docked pay for not playing. Here's the deal. The Chiefs can run their team however they want. They won the division. They earned home field. Play your players, don't play your players. That's their prerogative. What the Bengals need to do is not shit the bed the first half of the year, because had you won one more game in the first half of the year, you wouldn't have had this problem. So you can't
beat the Patriots in game one. We'd still have the number one overall pick and you'd be in the playoffs. I'm sorry, BK. I said that. I'm sorry. Pardon interruption. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. I mean, here's the thing. The Bengals, anytime you leave it in someone else's hands, that's on you. You had 18 weeks in the NFL season to control your own destiny. You chose to not leave it in someone else's hands. I don't want to hear it. The Chiefs did the right thing for them. Get mad, don't like them, hate them. I don't care, but it's their right. Bengals win more games, but that's the truth.
You know what's interesting, BK? I don't hear all of this hoopla about Philly. And one of their players actually had something pretty big to play for. No one on the Chiefs had anything to play for at all. So I'm with you on that, my guy.
Well, you know, it's just funny, though, to me, because teams rep players all the time, you know, and it seems to be okay in other areas like the Eagles or, you know, the Bills against New England where they mailed it in. The Bills had nothing to play for.
What they played for is they wanted to make sure that that 114-game starting streak that Josh Allen has stayed intact. So that's why he was out there for 2 seconds and then went back to the bench. It looks like everyone that had a record to play for got the message other than Philly. So do with that what you will.
Well, and that's part of the reason why their coach is having some issues being a player's coach these days. He's definitely not on the Christmas card list.
No, not at all. And that pretty much wraps it up for us this week. Make sure that you catch the weekend wrap-up show on next Wednesday. We'll be making sure that we go through all of the goings-on of Wild Card Weekend. We'll know exactly what's going on with the championship game in college at that point. We'll even have a few more things going on with the NBA and all that kind of good stuff. But for this evening, we are done. And remember, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Later, y'all.